Pick up your paintbrush. It's time for Hobby Support Group. Good evening, Ed. Hello, listeners.
Good evening, Tom. Hi, folks at home.
Hello, listeners. This evening, I'm here with Ed, and we've got a couple of topics we're going to chat about. Well, actually, three, not two. You know, we're spoiling you this evening. Firstly, we've got spreadsheets. So this is an episode with lots of lists. Hobby Mojo. And then, when is enough in a hobby project? And I think probably all three of these are going to intermingle with each other. So you may have tangents and ramblings that cross-pollinate them all. But before we kick off this evening, Ed, it's a Wednesday evening. I think maybe the first Wednesday evening we've recorded on. What beverage do you have to get through us this evening?
So I got home from work and had a beer. And I thought, well, I shouldn't have a second beer for the podcast. Otherwise, I'll be slurring all over the place. So I'm drinking a pint of soda water.
Nice. I am drinking a pint of chai tea.
Ooh.
In an IPA tankard. Because why not drink tea in a glass tankard?
I was at a meeting earlier this week, and a colleague of mine, who I know isn't a day drinker, but she was drinking herbal tea, like a purpley tea drink, out of what looked like a massive goblet of wine. So for a moment there, I was like, is she on the lash? It's only like 11 o'clock. But yeah, she was doing more or less exactly the same thing, drinking tea from an alcoholic-themed glass.
It is the joy of like Zoom working from the pandemic and stuff. You sort of realise, I now need new glassware to be seen drinking and want cameras with, otherwise it does look like it's, yeah, as you say, it's 10:30 in the morning and you're there, your third gallon of Merlot, you drink
exactly. Your
yeah, this isn't drink chat, listeners, this is Hobby Support Group. So Ed, a few weeks ago you did the daunting task, I think, of actually cataloguing your entire collection, and you know, I think it took the list making and listing of miniatures to like the nth degree. What was the inspiration behind that and why?
So it's the second time that I've done this. The first time I did it was during the first lockdown. And I wanted to try and get a view of what I had, what I wanted to do, also how much of it I've actually painted. It was more out of curiosity than anything else. This time around, I think, it was just after I'd bought a bunch of stuff at the start of September. I had a bit of extra money and I thought, oh, okay, there's a bunch of stuff that I wanted to get. And I thought, well, when am I going to paint this? So I thought, okay, as a discipline, I'm going to do the thing that I did way back and work out exactly how much I've got, fit them vaguely into different categories and see how many I've got painted. And the figure was sort of the same, although the in terms of proportion painted, but the overall number of miniatures is expanded. So I'm sort of keeping around at a quarter of painted collection. So yeah, that was the feeling was there was a tinge of guilt, but also I know that it was a useful thing that when I did it last time, and I knew that the old sheet was out of date, so I wanted to update it.
So were you in a position before you started then that you actually had a pretty good idea of what you have?
Sort of, although I think when you actually look at the stuff that you've got, I wasn't surprised by anything. I wasn't like finding miniatures that I'd forgotten that I bought. But I think to look at everything, it kind of solidifies, you can't ignore something when you're counting it, as it were. On paper or in theory, I knew how much I had, but actually sitting down and working it out kind of helped me think about it in more realistic terms.
Well, I will be honest and say I don't only forget what miniatures I've got, I forget entire armies that I've got. Like, even to this day, if you like held a gun to my head and said, like, how many 28mm painted World War II armies do you own? I couldn't tell you. It's somewhere between 12 and about 18. there's about...
Go on. No, I was just saying that I've got like a small number of categories. So it's not like I've got 18, 20, 30 armies, but within those categories, I've got a lot of things. So I think that like, I know I've got a lot of random fantasy monsters. I've got a lot of random fantasy adventurers. I know I've got a lot of Crimean War era Russians, but it's exactly how much, and okay, what's it going to look like if I sit down and paint this? That was the stuff that, you know, I needed to kind of ruminate on.
Yeah, like, I think my main storage and like way of tracking my collection is in the really useful boxes.
Yeah.
And I've got 4 7-foot tall stacks of really useful boxes, 2.5 of which are painted, 1.5 aren't painted. So it's all, and I know, like, that is my finite amount of storage. I can't fit more stuff in.
Yeah.
And so that's sort of like, I would like a spreadsheet, because I would like to actually know exactly how much I've got. And I think it would be a good motivational tool to know, oh, I've got 4,500 painted miniatures. I've got 4,000 unpainted miniatures. Right. The next 6 months, I'm going to try and paint an extra 750 miniatures. Kind of. I think I would like that sense of achievement. But I also think, especially at the moment when I'm not particularly getting a lot of time to do a lot of hobbying, for me to get everything out and catalogue it would be a major undertaking.
Yes.
I imagine it would, like, realistically probably take me like an entire weekend to turn my flat upside down and find out where I've got everything squirreled away, because I'm sure I'm not like alone of one of these people who've got like, I've got like four boxes of sprues. I will like compact the boxes and the sprues and compile them in a single box to sort of like wang them all in. And I treated myself to a new work desk the other week, and I realized that it's an antique one. The drawers are really deep, and I sort of realized, oh, these drawers are too deep. Oh, I know, they will fit Tamiya kits at the back, which then like will become really good sort of like drawer filling. So like my hobby shelves all of a sudden looked much thinner, because it's all, I just know that each drawer has got like 2 or 3 148 Tamiya kits at the back to stop papers shoving forward. So, you know, they're forming a function,
yes,
while also taking up empty space.
Yeah, I fear the temptation of having deep drawers where you can scroll things away. I think that one constructive thing I got out of the process was, I store mine in a variety of different units. So I've got some KR cases, I've got some really useful boxes, some kind of like oddments of different other receptacles for my stuff. And what I worked out was, because I was making a record of empty spaces in my KR cases or empty slots in other storage units, I've been able to move things around and actually reduce the sort of footfall of my boxes, as it were. I've got rid of a couple of boxes because I've worked out better ways of shuffling things around, so that for example, I had a Warhammer 40k Baneblade, never painted but built. In fact, I bought it off you, Tom, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I would imagine that quite a lot of the things that you've probably got selling boxes you've probably bought from me or Andy.
Yes.
Or suppose it's probably that I've bought it from Andy, then probably sold it to you. Andy's probably bought it from Neil. It's a small ecosystem of where, yes, we buy and sell stuff too.
I've sort of ended up being the elephant's graveyard.
No, it's you or Bobby. It's one of the two.
That's true. That is fair. Although I've got a bunch of Bobby's orcs, so
yeah, sometimes leave the M25. Fair. Not very often.
So I had this Baneblade in a random box because I thought, well, this is too big to store in any of the KR cases. But then I was moving stuff around and went, actually, you know what? I can get this Baneblade in, and I now have I've got rid of that box and a couple of other boxes as well. So if nothing else, having a proper survey of what you've got, for me anyway, I found that you're able to, you know, rationalize things a bit better in terms of what's stored where.
No, it's something I definitely intend to do, because like since I've started using a lot more of the MDF trays inside the really useful boxes and working out, right, especially even like 28 mil infantry, quite often you can get two trays, depending on how, like, you can get two trays of the infantry,
yeah,
in there. So it might I think it's probably quite possible that I might be able to get sort of like three armies, 28 mil like World War II armies, in two boxes by putting the infantry in one box and all the vehicles and artillery and stuff in another box. So when they get round to that, but because I do really like sorting out my collection, I find, like, to be honest, like a large part of the hobby that I really enjoy is actually cataloguing and sorting things out.
Yeah,
I am one of these people that has, like, you know, I've gone through periods of time where, like, all my bits boxes and everything is all bagged up into separate baggies of heads and right arms, you know, right hands, right arms holding pistols, right hand, right arms open-handed, and you realize you've never got any open hands. Everything's always, and they become like gold dust.
Yeah.
But I think, do you find now that you've got this spreadsheet, are you intending to use it more to like guide your hobby and like specifically moving things from like one category to the other, sort of like a bit like a Kanban board? Or was it more just really so you just had a better understanding of what you've got and just really sort of like better visualize it in your head?
I think knowing me, it's not going to be a living document. I don't see myself updating that spreadsheet every time I've painted a unit or finished an army. So I think it's really its usefulness. I'm still working out things that I can do with it. So one thing when I was looking through the final results was, well, thinking to myself, what is this army going to look like when it's finished? Like, how much is a finished army? Not just the stuff that I bought, but also, I guess a good example is my British Napoleonics 28 mil. Like, in my mind, I want to have a good black powder sort of sized army, even though I use it for plenty of different systems. The idea of getting a couple of battalion down would be great. But my dwarves, for example, or a bunch of wood elves I've got, I've got with the dwarves a lot of infantry, a couple of guys with firelock weapons, thunderers, I guess, because they're mostly Games Workshop ones, and I've got a couple of longbeards, but not enough for them actually to be usable units if I was going to play third edition Warhammer Fantasy, for example, or even, I don't know, a Dragon Rampant or something. I haven't really thought about, well, I've been accruing all this stuff, but what does the army look like? What's the aim if this sort of stuff all gets painted? What's it going to look like at the end? I've not done that, and I think that might be something I do with a spreadsheet, of going, okay, I need X number of dwarves for this army to be finished before I actually start painting it.
Well, I think I would say that sounds like a really good idea. I think like having an idea of what you want to paint for it and looking at things and going, well, I've say like you've got eight Thunderers. You go, well, actually, I know I'm in a similar boat with some of my fantasy stuff. It's like you can't play like classic versions of fantasy with it because you haven't got the right armors. You go, I've got loads of these, but I've got none of this. Or you're like, oh, yeah, I've got this like sixth edition fantasy army. I can't play like Age of Sigmar or anything with it, or any of the more modern games, because it's completely wrong, which is not enough points, or I'm missing the two or three bits that I need. And you go, oh, I've got these like eight dudes, I need another four. Then you like find out how expensive those four dudes are, and you go, well, actually, yeah, I've got like three quarters of what I need, but to buy the quarter that I actually need to finish it off, it's going to be as expensive as starting a new army for a different game.
Yeah.
What do I sort of need to do? But then, yeah, something like Dragon Rampant, you go, oh, I need 10 of these dudes. I've got eight. Like, I've gone down the route of what I did, was making up, make some like unit, the movement trays for them to put them in units. And I just put a couple of space fillers in there that like count as figures. And then, like, as soon as a couple of guys get killed, I just sort of swap them in. So you, as long as you're like, I think, playing with like, you know, a mate, and you can go, well, here's eight bases, just that like wheelbarrow or chest or something happens to be like some loot that it's like model does like loot the group of taken with them. It actually counts as like a figure. I just didn't have the model. For what you're sort of doing, I think is one way of, in a way, like recycling these older things, or going, I've got this third edition army. I'm not going to try and play 5th edition with it. I'm going to play 3rd edition with it, but where it kind of works.
Yeah.
Which I think, again, is something I seem to be seeing a lot more people doing.
Yes.
I definitely seem to be seeing it doing a lot of people who are sort of like wanting to get back into 40K, especially, but realizing that they're sort of like their 10-year-old 40K army is, especially if you played like Marines 10 years ago, you probably can use more or less nothing of it.
Yeah.
And you actually go, well, I could just play like 6th edition 40K with the armies that I've got. Might even still have the rule books, the codexes, and everything. Why not do that? You know, why try and reinvent the wheel? Which I think it is very useful. I know Andy, a few years ago, before we started doing the podcast, did his massive piles project where he worked out that he had like 500 models to paint in his collection, and he realized he wasn't going to. He made the commitment to not buy any new models till he'd got them all painted. And he actually sort of managed to do that, like, you know, managed to like clear his entire collection, like his backlog, by getting them all painted. And I think immediately then like went out and splurged and restocked. But I think he's actually a more, I don't want to like speak for him, but I think he's pretty much nearly got everything he's got to do painted, apart from some Carthaginians.
Yeah. Well, we were talking about this when we were doing the Romans and Britons game around my house. He hadn't played with them since he painted them a couple of years ago, but on a whim, we started doing Romans versus Britons, and he could provide everything. I didn't need to paint anything. So I think it's a good position to be in.
I think it's something definitely that I'm finding myself in more and more. And I know on the Hobby Hangouts as well, it's something that's come up more and more often, is that as we are all getting older and we've all been painting and playing for like quite a long period of time, you do have so much stuff you can play with.
Yeah.
It's not, you're no longer generally painting stuff so you can put it on. You're not like, I've got to get this painted so I can play a game. It's like, I want to get these painted so I can add them into a game I'm already playing, or yes, I'm going to start playing a different game. It's not like, if I don't get these painted, I've got nothing to play.
Picking up on that point, I'm sort of in a halfway house. Some of my collections are playable. Like, I can field a English Civil War force in 10mm and 28mm. British Napoleonics, I totally enough to play with. But there are other things that I would like to do that I still have and I've been collecting for ages that aren't anywhere off the ground, like my the dwarves. I can get a skirmish force together, but nothing more than that. And the wood elves, which I got as part of a job lot, because a friend from the club was getting rid of. I've got a yen to do them, but I'm nowhere near having painted them. And I think that's, but then I'm correcting myself now. I can play. I've got a workable fantasy army, that Empire Einposen thing where they're all monopose plastics. I've got something that I can field. So yeah, it's, I would agree, for the most part, I'm not in a position where I can't play games with stuff that I've got.
I think I've at least found that has quite impacted my hobby mojo in one regard, in that I'm, especially because like we've been playing like a lot of English Civil War and with Napoleonics and stuff. It's like, oh, we're playing this game in 3 months. Like, we're playing a game, book a game in for like, say, 2 months time, because none of us ever have any free time.
Yeah.
And it's like, right, we book this game in for 2 months time. What have you got to paint? Nothing. It's all done. It's, whereas it, you know, even like a few years ago, it would be like, right, we'll play in 2 weeks' time. Right, I've got to get this cavalry unit painted by then, because I want it painted, because I don't play with unpainted models. But finding that having everything painted for these bigger projects, it does take out a lot of that drive. And the same as like how, like, I used to do lots of events, and that was always my motivation for doing a project. It was like, right, come up with an idea, buy a ticket for an event, come up with an army, build, practice, and paint the army, take it to the event, put it in the cupboard, do another army, which is how I've ended up with so many ridiculous 28mm World War II armies, because, you know, only idiots play with an army once, take an army to an event once, and then go, I've done that, next one. But it's because I was using the events as motivation and almost like the treat for having painted the army, and it became part of the thing. That, like, now I don't do that. It is for me, I have to like find my mojo in different places. And I think like definitely sort of like moving into like the overall list idea of you don't just have to work on a single project. Because I always used to be like, I'm going to have one project on the go. I'm going to start it, finish it. That's done. Boom. Completely done. Next thing. Boom. Now I sort of like flip from all over the place, but it's quite easy to sort of like flip all over the place for 6 months and not actually sort of finish anything.
Oh, yes. Yeah, yeah.
Well, I've got a unit of these painted, a unit of these painted. The shoes done on that unit, sort of away you're going. And I find sort of like having the overall list and going, well, yeah, I've got like, I've not finished anything for a few months, but I know like a couple of weeks work and I got like three or four things finished at once. I do find, you know, I find that you really useful as a structure of actually going and working on this and also being mindful of, you know, what are the bigger goals that you sort of want to do and thinking also like tracking down what I do and actually don't paint. And
yeah.
And also something that me and Andy have spoken quite a lot about this year especially is realizing how little time we get for gaming.
Yes.
Because you go, oh, you know, like we game at the best once a week. And at the moment, I'm saying that at least 50% of the time, something comes up that one of us can't do it.
Yeah.
So you're looking at like, you know, I would be amazed if I get sort of like 20 games a year in of whatever it is. And that includes playing Keyforge and card games.
Yeah.
Maybe slightly more with board games because they're sort of easier to sort of like, sort of, you know, like playing D&D and stuff, but maybe like 20 war game sessions a year, probably, if I'm being generous.
Yeah.
And so you don't get that much time to actually play with.
That's true. Yeah.
All your toys. And so it means, oh, I've not played with, you know, this army for like 3 or 4 years. Does that mean you don't want to play with it or you just not had time to play with it? And yeah. I know it's something that I'm definitely at the point of having to decide, like, I'm going to get rid of some of my armies because I've run out of room. And also, I don't need them. Yeah. I think, like, I've got, like, an Oathmark army and a Kings of War army. Like, the Oathmark army is sort of, like, Viking Age, like, historical figures. They're mostly gripping beaks, plastics and stuff, with some, yeah. like, fantastical... They've got like a big giant and like some Hilda folk and
yeah, I remember you talking about it, yeah.
And like I've got a Kings of War army, which is the Warlord plastic Caesarian Romans, which are for like one of the human factions there. Like both of those armies, really, I can kind of use for any generic fantasy.
Yeah.
If I want to, you know, they're men with spears and swords and that sort of thing. I don't need them both. And I think the Oathmark one is the more, it's definitely the one that I'm going to look to sell more because things like, as you said with the Baneblade, giants, dragons, that sort of stuff take up so much room with
certainly
all the wings and that sort of stuff. And also, like, I think Oathmark, at least from where I sit, it's almost like a dead game. I don't know anybody who plays it. I think because it came out in lockdown, it just got like came and went and no one plays it. I would much rather, if I get time to start playing like a fantasy game, I'd much rather play Kings of War.
Yeah.
I'd either like play Kings of War or Dragon Rampant, of which I can do. And so, you know, it seems in a way, although I enjoyed painting the models and, you know, because I got to use some of the Victrix Dark Age Cavalry and all that sort of stuff, don't really need to keep them. I don't see a reason why they're going to come off the shelf when I need them. And if they do need to come off the shelf to do something, I've got other things that can sort of go in with them anyway. So that's sort of a little bit first tangent.
Well, I think
of many tangents.
I mean, it goes down to the main question, which is, okay, why are you doing it? Why are you painting this army? Why are you storing it? What's the plan? If you're painting something for a new system that you're playing and you're playing it on the regular, that question answers itself. Well, I'm painting these so that I can complete the army so I can play this game. And that is less the case now for us because we've been hobbying for a bit longer. So it becomes more, you know, okay, what am I adding to this that I don't already have? Or what am I doing because I want to have another army, which is slightly different for the same game that I'm already playing.
Like, I don't know about you, but I've only just realized that I can't think the last time I painted an army specifically to play a specific game.
Yeah.
And really enjoyed it. Like, the armies I have painted for the last few years are armies that I've wanted to paint either for the period or for the models if they're, like, fantastical or weird models.
Yeah.
I've wanted to play them either for the models or the period, not a specific rule set.
I've done that with two armies. One was the Horus Heresy army. The second one was this Empire one. But most of my armies have been, now's the time I get to do this project that I've been thinking about for years and years, I wanted to do, like my Space Orcs, like Napoleonics, like English Civil War. Although English Civil War is a bit different because even though it wasn't a specific system, we were all building that an army around the same time. So it was for an event, although it was a bit more fungible in terms of, okay, how many you need and what the time scales are. So I guess I'm a mix. It's not the only way to game. And I think if you don't necessarily enjoy that process, there's no point chasing after it. I'm kind of in two minds. That's the thing. I don't want to commit to something entirely new where I have to buy a whole bunch of new stuff. But at the same time, I do like the idea that there's a project you're working on and then there's the outcome, which is the campaign thing, like you're talking with your bolt action armies.
Yeah, like there is absolutely no right or wrong way of doing it, is there? There is. Yeah. It's whatever people, whatever brings an individual hobbyist joy of doing their hobby is the right way to do it. I know this is, I think, like the first year for me, really, where I've started on like what is going to be a long-term project with no actual game currently in mind for what to play it,
yeah,
which is the 20 mil hat Germany, East Africa stuff, which are lovely models. It's a period I'm really interested in. There isn't a game currently out there that actually lets you play it. But yeah. I've got the models. I enjoy painting them, and it is like I've got multiple units and multiple boxes of them. And I've painted one box, but they are really fun to paint, and that they're a nice change because each box is quite different. So like, I've already painted the carriers. It's like, oh, I'm now going to paint some like the cavalry, or I might paint the, you know, some Schutztruppen or whatever. It's a difference in that there's sort of like a nice, I'm planning on sprinkling them in over the next few years, like between my other projects.
Yeah.
So like, there will be like a slow growth thing, maybe similar to like what you're doing with your Crimea thing. You don't necessarily commit a lot of time to it in one. You do bits at a time,
yeah,
but then sort of like slowly grows on it, which I think is a good way of doing things with it. Like the Airfix style, sort of those 20 mil figures, I think maybe not wanting to paint them for months on end.
Yes.
But very much fun to sort of like flit in and around. But I do definitely see the appeal of, oh, here's a new game, buying like the box set or the starter set or something. Right, we're doing this, we're all doing it together, we're working on it together. We'll now play and play it.
Yeah.
And I like, it's why part of me would like to do that with like Kings of War or something. Mm-hmm. And go, right, we're going to all start like, get a Kings of War ambush set or something, and we'll do that and do it. But then, like, the rational part of my brain goes, you've already got Kings of War army you can play with. You don't need it. You know, if you do play Kings of War, really, you probably want to do it in 10 mil, not 28, because it's easier to take down the club and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And I think also, like, probably like a big game changer for us as a gaming group, like, hopefully something that we promote through the podcast, is the very much idea that when you do a project, you do both armies.
Yes.
So, like, you pick a project, and it's like, you decide to do something. It's three projects in one, because you do, like, the army that you want to do, it's opposing force, and then some mm-hmm. terrain. And then you go, right, we're doing this, and then it's so much easier to then find an opponent.
Yes.
Who wants to sort of play it. And then you go. But I think by doing that, you do then have to be more mindful of what size armies am I going to do this with?
Yeah.
And are they going to, like, how big is this project going to be in either sort of like size, time to paint, or money? And you know, like, this is something that I like put a lot of mental time into when I was doing my 6 mil Waterloo project, and why I just chose to do the British and the French. And like, I would like, I did the British first, and I sort of pretty much went in, and it isn't a thoroughly 100% correct, like, order of battle. There are a few, you know, line units and things which are missing. There's, you know, mm-hmm. there's not quite the right number of cavalry. There's not quite enough cavalry. There's not enough cannon. But it's more or less there.
Yeah.
I then did the French, and I will admit I did the French on the scale that I think would give it a relatively balanced game. And, like, I don't have any, like, guard in there at all. And the reason why that was is twofold. Number one, I originally built that army, those two armies, with the intention of playing Black Powder with them.
Yep.
And they're roughly pointed out about the same. That they're sort of like roughly pointed out about the same, but there's also enough in there to do in their full forms, there's enough for them to, I think, play every campaign game that's in the books, apart from the other nations. Like, you just, whatever British and French you need in the books are there. I've got enough for. Is if yes. if you need, like, Austrians or Brunswickers or anything like that, I haven't obviously got any of those, but I've got all the British and French that you need. Like, I wanted to add some guard and stuff, because obviously you're doing French, you want old guard, you know, guard, middle guard, that sort of stuff. But then I realised they wouldn't fit in the storage box that I've got, because at the moment that army fits in 4 MDF trays that fits in one of the 9-litre really useful boxes, like double stacked ones. And also, if I bought that guard, it would be like an extra £150.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, it makes like a 300-ish pound project, a lot closer to like nearly 500.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, unfortunately a bit out of my budget.
Yep.
To do quite often. Which, again, it's also had to influence what I've done with the ECW thing that I'm working on at the minute.
Yeah.
Like the foot is working on a 5-to-1 ratio. I can't do that with the cavalry because I can't afford 300 goods with the, I can't afford 300 goods with the cavalry, as much as I would like to paint 300 goods with 6 mil cavalry. I haven't got the storage space for them. And I think more importantly, really, for the game, they won't game very well because they'll just be take up too much of a footprint.
Yes. Yeah.
So it's a triple whammy of, right, using a lot less cavalry that I wouldn't necessarily want to for that. So I think, like, when I'm thinking, like, when is enough, especially for me nowadays, so many of my armies are dictated to by what fits in one really useful box. And it's like, well, I could fit like an extra 5 or 6 dudes in here, but they've got like 7 men squad minimums, so I guess I'm not taking it.
Yeah.
And I know when we were playing a lot of like bolt action, like 28 mil World War II, like, Andy was very much a fan of the idea of, like, you just build a 1,000-point army with just the dudes. You build an army, and that's it. And you go, right, what do I need for this? Right, and you boom, 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 boom. You buy what you need, and that's it. You might have, like, 1 or 2 extra dudes. You don't go, well, maybe do I want a medium mortar? Do I want a heavy mortar? Do I want, like, an AA gun? You know, you just sort of, like, cut yourself off from that and go, I'm just building this. And I think that is a really great way of doing things when you don't play games very often. It's like it's a game that you don't know very well. So you might not realise, well, this light mortar I've taken is absolutely useless. I should, you know, what on earth? You know, or you bought like medium machine guns. It's like, well, these are slightly pathetic. Swap them out. And then, like, if it's a game that you like more, you then might start realising, actually, this is a game I play a lot. I want all the options.
Yeah. I think we're getting better as we go, as a group, I think. we're learning the tricks about how you actually manage a project, how you cut your cloth so that you've you're not wasting time, money and effort into doing extraneous things. I can think, again, having looked through all my stuff, there's sort of a dividing line of recent projects where everything is very regimented. It's more or less entirely done. And I planned it before I started it. I bought it, I painted it, and now it's in, it's got a, you know, it's proper storage. And those other earlier projects where it's kind of a bit more, oh, I'll pick a bit of this, pick a bit of that, and oh, that's going cheap, I'll grab that. And I think I don't want to abandon those slightly crazy projects, but it becomes easier now to do those regimented projects. And I feel a bit more at sea when I'm looking at these sort of boxes of random things that I've accrued over the years.
I think you've hit a nail on the head there. It's like things are going cheap. It's, you think, oh, I wouldn't mind a Viking army. Oh, here's like 8 boxes of like Hearthguard for like 15 quid a box or something. I guess I'll buy all 8 of those.
And then it's a mug's game. It's a mug's game.
And then then you look at them and then you've got like 200 of these figures and it's like, what do I do with these? And then it's like you start using them and you start painting them and you go, these are really junky sculpts. I really don't like these. And they're like, I only really need like about 20 of these and I've got like 200. What do you sort of do? And I know for me, like that dividing line was the English Civil War.
Yeah.
Of going, right, not only are you getting things cheap, because there were some good deals around at the time, but you also go, right, I just want the toys. I want, let's do this. Let's do it properly and go, right, I want 4 battalion a foot. I want like 5 or 6 of cavalry. Let's, in a way, go crazy. And then when you were doing things like sprue sales and like 3 for 2s and that sort of stuff, you go, well, I need 4, but it's 3 for 2, so I'll buy 6. And then you go, well, actually, like, I could buy the 2 battalions, but the 2 starter sets are actually cheaper, so they give more. So like, that's why I ended up with, like, and I know this is old rope now, listeners, but like, that's why that my 28mm ECW army is too big.
Yeah,
it is far too big to transport. It is impossible to play with on my own.
Yeah,
it realistically needs 3 people to play, and 2 people to transport.
Yes,
it's like I have to transport it on a sack bearer because it's too unwieldy to sort of carry in various shopping bags or army bergens. And it's ridiculous because it's like it probably takes up 20% of my total army. No. Maybe like 15% of my total hobby storage space is one single army. And so like I've realized like when we played like the last big ECW game, which wasn't that long ago, it was earlier this year, I think, wasn't it? We played Decay.
I think so, yes. Yeah. In 28mm, yeah.
Yeah. And like, I brought about half of it and still had like more than enough to sort of like share and, you know, dole around to everyone else. So it was like, so like, the Napoleonic 28mm stuff, much more slimlined.
Yeah.
And, you know, no faff, no chaff, exactly what was ordered. And even then, I realised I was going to be, like, slightly short on what I wanted. So rather than doing the thing of, oh, just buy a couple of extra boxes, I just bought, like, a couple of extra sprues and go, right, it was not necessarily, like, the best bang for buck for specific models. But I was like, when I need an extra 4 models, it's much easier and cheaper to buy a sprue. And pay like 8 quid for a sprue, then pay like 20 quid for a box of 30 of them, and have, you know, 2 dozen just knocking about that I don't really need.
We've all that lesson, but the impulse to buy something is a lot more. You get an easier kick out of buying something than you do actually putting it together, building it, and painting it. I think most of us now have a bit more discipline when it comes to going, oh, I want this and I want this and I want this. And then suddenly, you know, you're mired in stuff.
Well, that's why I found the oval list transformative.
Yeah.
I think since I started using like Andy's oval list concept, I think the only thing I've bought that I've not painted is the East Africa stuff.
Yeah.
Which I kind of started, I have technically started on, and that is only like been put to bed temporarily because of all the small scale stuff I've been doing, like, because I want to do this Joy 6 army. So that, like, everything else I've bought in the last, like, since the lockdowns has been painted. Apart from my bloody miniature stuff, which is primed. But everything else has, like, been bought or painted. Like, I am, at least he says touch wood, I'm no longer hobby hoarding.
Yeah.
But also, like, I'm now more focused. If I now see a fantastic army deal going for, like, 50 quid, and go, that's like 300 quid worth of miniatures that someone's getting for 50 quid, I will just happily let it go.
Yeah.
Like, I don't need it. And, like, the way I've done that is I've left most of the, like, miniature trading groups. I don't go on eBay anymore. People are like, if I don't know there's a fantastic deal going on, it doesn't matter because I don't need it. I haven't got, you know, it would be great if somebody wanted to give me, you know, like a third edition fantasy army to go here. Because, you know, I know some of us, Ed, just find armies in the wild on the streets.
But yes, no, I literally.
But I just, yeah, even if people wanted to try and give me stuff, it's like, thank you, but I don't really want it or need it. Unless it was something that sort of like, you know, somebody wants to give me like a really nice Spanish succession, couple of armies or something like that, you know. Please message me and I'll give you my post address. But I think because I know what I want to do, I don't feel as easily distracted by like those big deals and that sort of thing, which I think also links into probably why I feel like I don't need a sort of like a database of what I've got. And I think like I appreciate and I like the idea of sort of like Warren's hobby budget, like hobby balance sort of thing. You know, I've painted 7 figures, I've bought in 5 figures, so I'm like plus 1 figure sort of bonus kind of thing. Because I know for like since about 2000, I'm running up sort of like a massive hobby positive in that I've painted, you know, thousands of figures and have bought hundreds at the most. And nearly all of everything I've bought nearly is small scale. Which is, you know, I'm not sure if it's a cop out. I don't buy massive armies anymore. I just buy kilos of like 6 and 10 mil.
Well, I think, you know, it's so long as you've got a plan for them. I think that's the thing. I should like fact check myself because I did start at the top of the episode by saying that the reason I started doing this Excel spreadsheet was because I bought a bunch of stuff and got a bit freaked out by it. So I can't say that I'm entirely on the narrow path when it comes to not buying stuff I don't need. But having said that, we're talking about I bought a bunch of the Game of Thrones themed miniatures that Dark Sword, I always get the name wrong, Dark Sword in America do through Magister Militarum because they're closing down. And it was just, and I got about 7 or 8 of those. They're really lovely sculpts and I don't regret having got them, but I was thinking, well, that's really another project. And what about all the other projects? So I think what I am probably less good at based on what you're describing in comparative compared to you is knowing what I want to do. Like I've got quite a clear idea about the Napoleonic's army, the Crimean War. Even then, that always goes around the edges. It's never quite the main focus. There's still a bit of indecision in my hobby time of like going, well, I can't part with this stuff, but at the same time, I don't literally do not know when I'm going to paint this. Like, is it going to be in a couple of years? Is it going to be in 10 years? Is it going to be next year? So I think that's what I still find a bit challenging is to kind of make a decision and commit to things that I've been accruing over the years.
Well, at least for me, I made the decision like last year when I was redrawing up my overlist that there were some things that I wasn't going to carry over because as much as I'd like to paint them, and I will paint them eventually, they weren't on my immediate horizon.
Yeah.
And things like I've got several 28mm World War II armies primed and ready to paint. And I would like to play with them. But at the moment, I'm simply not playing 28mm World War II.
Yes.
Wanted to paint and play with the 6mm World War II stuff instead, which I've done. And like, I think, I know I definitely have lots of things in my collection which are like, I know I want them painted at some point simply because I want them because I like them. But I'm in no rush to get them done.
Yeah.
And because I have fully reconciled myself to the belief that I'm hopefully going to be building, painting, and playing with models for the rest of my life, having models that I really like sort of sat there waiting to be painted is fine. Yeah. I think it only becomes a problem really is if you're spending money that you haven't got, or you're got no room, you've got literally no room for them. And I know like the vast majority of my collection I bought in like a period from sort of like 2016 to like 2020, when I had sold like several books, got like some great commissions, and had, you know, a relatively decent amount of disposable income to spend on toys. Yeah. And also was able to take full advantage of Spruce sales and things. So I have got literally probably like 100, if not more, like Warlord Sprues,
mm-hmm.
when they were selling them for like £1 each.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I can sort of, you know, kit bashing till, you know, I'm fed up of kit bashing forever. So just, you know, bolt turnip or some like diesel punky stuff or whatever I want to do at some point. The technique I've done for actually like what giving myself a bit more motivation to actually make sure I paint the stuff that I want to paint is having things that I actually want to get done sort of in ice within visual eye shot. And so like, yeah. when we moved into our new flat, I like pop up loads of shelves, but I purposely put like a few hobby shelves up near where I paint. And that's where I keep the projects that I'm currently there. They sort of hold about 6 months worth of painting on there. So yeah. They're sort of like, I see them every day. And it's like, right, they're sort of like in my eye shot. Whereas like the stuff that's in the cupboard, I forget it's in there.
Yeah, I've tried that approach and I think it does help get things done over the year. So I do have a similar approach. I think in classic hobby support group fashion, we had like a 45-minute conversation before we remembered that we were recording an episode and started recording. But so we did all, when we were talking about how chilled out you can be about having something in the larder, which you, as it were, I guess I get ants in my pants a bit about things that, oh, it's another year and I still haven't done it. It's whatever attitude you bring to it. I think I just need to chill out about it, really. Well,
I think, I don't know about you, but I know I've definitely had I've painted for me, one of those armies was the Freikorps that I had.
Yes.
Which I'd had for several years, and they were it's only a couple of weeks worth of painting. I'll get them done. They were like a low hanging fruit project that I'd never got done because there was always I never had a reason to play them because it's not like I'm going to. It's to use them properly. I then got to start making post offices and newspaper offices and loads of terrain and all that sort of stuff. But then when Xena's Rampant came out and I realized, oh, I can use them for Weird War Space Freight Call, it was the perfect opportunity. I had to sort of paint them. And so then I did just get the paint on them because they were something that were giving me some angst. To go, yeah, they've been sort of things that I'd wanted painted for a long time because they were fun models and I just wanted them sort of done. The same as I've got a bunch of 28mm marginalia rabbits and hares.
Yes.
And stuff to paint, which again are used for no game in the world that I currently know of. You know, if anybody knows a game where you can use marginalia hares that are skinning monks and beating clergymen to death with sticks and that sort of thing, please let me know. I want to get them painted because they're just really fun models. I just want them sat on the shelf. But again, other things sort of come in front, so that they are in my eye shot as I sit here recording now. But again, it always comes back to that good old chestnut of the overall list, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Of choosing what you put on it that you want to do And also, what makes individuals happy? Like, I know, like, down the club, we've got people who have, like, been working on sort of, like, say something like a 30K army for, like, a decade.
Yeah.
And they go, well, this month I've painted, like, a dreadnought arm. And it's, like, you know, they've made, like, an absolutely, like, amazing paint job on it. And, like, you know, they are really happy with their progress.
Yeah. Hello, Aiden, painting. By the way.
And, like, their army looks amazing, but I would lose the will to live painting that slowly. Whereas other people, you know, we have, like, Warren, who's like, oh, you know, it's been 7 hours since I last painted something. Here's my Golden Demon entry today, which is just amazing. And I think it is just whatever brings people joy and what works. And, you know, I think you don't, some of us like to finish things. Some of us just like, others just like to drop in and out of things. Like, I was always like, I have to finish a complete army. I've now moved on to, I have to finish a complete unit. Like, I can't, I'm not yet at the point where I can go, like, I'll paint, like, half a line regiment of Napoleonic infantry, and I'll then go and do, like, half a squad of, like, Schutztruppen or something, and then I'll go back and do the other half of that. That gives me the heebie-jeebies. I have to do, like, the full squad. And, like, I still do, like, all my basing on an army level, so, like, nothing really gets finished still till, like, the entire army's finished.
Yeah.
In that regard, but I think it's just what works for you. And I think, you know, people like Ben with his, like, Napoleonics, where he just has, like, a unit here and there, and then, you know, do some Star Wars or whatever, and, like, his painting always looks amazing.
Yeah, it's just absolutely.
Like, what works for individuals, and, like, not being too stressful. Like, I find, like, the idea of, like, a Kanban board, where, like, you know, you're moving things. If listeners don't know, they work pretty much, like, you have various categories of things, don't you, and you sort of move it from one category to the next. Mm-hmm. So it goes, oh, this is like something that's on the sprue. It's now been, like, cleaned and is built. And now I've now primed it. So it goes from, like, the primed to the next stages. Now it's now has, like, its base colours on. So it moves from the base colour to the, like, the washed column. I'm not interested in that kind of bookkeeping.
No.
I've tried using them for a book I was working on, using that technique for a book I was working on, and I realized I spent about an hour every morning updating that. And I was like, actually, this is really good procrastination.
I think there's sometimes you do have to do things that you aren't enjoying because the end result will be enjoyable. I think I've got a pretty good handle now, I think, on what works for me in terms of getting things done. But there are still some areas of hobbying which feel a bit chaotic or feel a bit like, I'm, you know, this isn't bringing me joy, even though I can't get rid of it. And I think with the spreadsheet, I was probing at it, I guess, to see, okay, how can I improve this slightly dysfunctional thing that I still have, which is big projects that I haven't started.
I think it's a truly personal thing, isn't it?
What
works for us. And I think, but I know I've spoken to people who are like, oh, they say about how they hate painting. And it's like, well, what are you working on at the minute? Or, like, 116 man unit Napoleonics. It's like, oh, that must be fun. but I think I'm probably very lucky in that there is no, like, aspect of the hobby that I dislike.
Yeah.
Apart from repainting and touch, I don't like repairing models.
Yes.
That's why everything gets a million coats of varnish. But, like, I don't find anything particularly honest. I sometimes get, like, fatigued with a project.
Yeah.
As if you go, oh, this is the 147th version of this exact sculpt that I've painted this backpack on. I'm really quite sick of painting this belt buckle.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. But then, like, because I'm wary of that now, I don't do, like, 100 sets of shoes or, like, 100 belts at a time. I do, like, you know, maybe 25 or something like that. You know? So it's I give myself little breaks where I go, oh, that's going to be a. By the time you finish those, you're going to want a palate cleanser. Do something else after you've done them so it doesn't become boring. Yeah. Or just listen to a more fun podcast or something. And
that's
just,
always a. Yeah.
just sort of like zone out, which is, to be honest, like 99.9% of my hobbying I'm doing while I'm listening to like an audiobook or podcast or something. It's yeah. part of like my sort of like self-care process kind of way. So it's like, it doesn't matter if I'm sat down for 10 minutes or like 3 hours, I'll be listening to something. And so it doesn't really matter if I'm doing something sort of like slightly mindlessly boring, because yeah. I don't really find it boring. I find it very relaxing. It's why I like the hobby.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's only, and it's also why I avoid really the bits of hobbying that give me more stress I enjoy, which is like trying to do really nice paint jobs on larger scale models, because I just find it stressful and having to think and concentrate. So now this isn't supposed to, I want to sit here and be a blancmange, not be exactly worried about, am I going to mess up the highlight on this axe shaft, and then like, you know, oh, there's a 50 quid model ruined, the junky paint job.
I've never got bitten by that bug. I do feel I as I said before, there's a middle point that I get with any large project where I'm like, what am I doing? This is really tedious. But I have, feel like I have to push through it for my own good. And I think there's, again, this is a very personal thing. I get that with everything that I do. Like, there will be a point at which I have a little cartoon cloud over something, over my head while I'm doing something, and then I'll push through it and then it'll be fine. So I think you just, you know, you've got to, sometimes you take the rough with the smooth, I think. But when you get there, for me, I you know, I'm always pleased with what I've got.
I completely agree. I think it's very important, I think, for all listeners to be mindful that, you know, this show is called like the Hobby Support Group. It's a hobby. It's supposed to be something that we do for fun. And I know, especially the last few months, I've just, for life and circumstance, like, my hobby time for actually doing hobbying has been very limited. I've not had very much like spare time to do hobby, and the spare time I have had for indulging in other hobbies, how many hobbies can you get in one sentence, is I've been going to the cinema more. It's like, it's no secret that I live in cinemas most weekends. The joy of living in London and having the Prince Charles Cinema, which do like obscure movie all nighters from sort of like midnight to 8 a.m. on Saturday and Sundays. So they sort of like don't take up your time too much if you don't sleep. But like, they've sort of been taking up like, you know, at least like one weekend, if not two weekends a month out of my time, really, which is primarily when I've done a lot of my normal hobbying. Yeah. So like, my time to paint and stuff is massively decreased. But I'm finding, like, I am hobbying in what time I get, and I'm enjoying it a lot more. And it's not just like I'm going through the process more, but I don't feel pressured like, oh, it's Wednesday, I haven't painted anything since Sunday, I'd better sit down and paint something in the next, you know, if I don't paint anything today, I'm no longer a hobbyist. I don't think that someone's going to come and like take my paint away and go, you know, you're no longer a proper nerd. So I think, like, and the same with playing games. Like, I don't think I've played, I think the last game I've played was when me and you played Black Powder / Command and Colors, which was probably August.
I think that's right.
Just because of life and work and circumstances, I've just not had time in the week to play a game. And I've had to cancel many things. Hopefully playing a game with Ben next week. You know, we'll touch wood and see if I can roll a three to be able to play a game on a work night. But it's why we wanted, because we've been wanting to do like a Hobby Mojo episode for ages without it sounding sort of like really mopey. Because I think, like, Andy's on holiday at the minute, so he's not able to answer it. But I think he's in a slightly sort of similar boat. He's not necessarily painting a huge amount. He's not necessarily playing a huge amount, but he's sort of like enjoying what he's doing.
Yeah.
But just not as much as it needs to. And I think it's probably just how things are at the moment for us all with how life is, everything is. You know, you don't have to put in 15 hours a week painting and hobbying week in, week out to still consider yourself a hobbyist and be a hobbyist. You go, well, actually, yeah, I've done 4 hours this month. That's it's what works for you. And I think I would loathe it if anybody thought, oh no, you've got to put like X amount of time in per day or per week or whatever. I don't think our hobby is one of those hobbies where you have to keep constantly engaged in it. Also, yeah, you become a much better painter and modeler with practice and doing that sort of thing. But I don't think it's like, I took 6 weeks off when I did something. I don't think it's like you're going to come back and not be able to pick up a paintbrush again. Yeah, you're probably going to have to take a little bit of time to sort of like get your eye back in. But I think it's having breaks and just making sure it's all fun and never like work.
Yeah, that's true.
Never be work.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think the one caveat I would say is that sometimes when I've got a free day, I can find it quite hard to motivate myself to do anything. So I find that if I'm hobbying, I can go, well, I know exactly what this is going to entail. I just put one foot in front of the other. I'm going to be doing something today and I'm going to feel like I've spent my time well. So there are occasions where I hobby where it is a bit of a grind, but I kind of feel like it would be a grind to do anything. So, you know, this isn't me saying that my life is terrible. It's pretty good. But I do, like, I'm just one of those people that has a tendency to laziness sometimes and introspection. So I find that the hobbying is a good way of going, okay, here's my task for today. I have a thing to do. And yes, in the middle of that, there may be times where it's like a bit of a drag, but I feel like it's good for my mental health, even if I'm not enjoying it. But for the most part, hobbying is just like really easy, fun. I don't have a schedule that I'm working to. It's, you know, I can pick it up and put it down, which I think is the best way of doing it.
No, I think you again hit like one of the nails on that. They're talking about like mental health. I think like for me, like painting and hobbying is like a linchpin of my mental health.
Yeah.
I know when I am in need of more self-care, I hobby more because it's a way I find of getting my brain into a space where it can think and process or chill out. It's different for different people. I know I've spoken to like an awful lot of people who have interesting or challenging brains.
Yeah.
I think it's very common among like a decent proportion of hobbyists, by no means all hobbyists. Mm-hmm. But I think a lot of hobbyists do have like an aspect of self-care for it.
Yeah.
And I think it's definitely something that is probably not spoken of quite as much because, mm-hmm. you know, the vast majority of hobbyists are middle-aged men and we're not exactly the greatest bunch of people for talking about feelings and all that sort of stuff. It's like, well, I'm really anxious and stressed out, so painting these toy soldiers makes me feel less anxious and stressed out. It's probably not a conversation, and an awful lot of, unfortunately, a lot of people actually have with their friends, but like, you know, when I'm not being Mr. Rock and Roll Historian, you know, my other life is working as a creative practitioner in like mental health settings, and I know the transformative effect that creativity has on mental health, well-being, and like emotional health. So you don't have to be, you know, clinically depressed or have any other sort of like more complex issue. You can just be feeling a bit of any emotional malaise, and any kind of creativity helps that. It could be playing the guitar, it could be painting, you know, watercolors, could be pottery, could be cooking, anything. It just happens to be that painting toy soldiers is, I think, one of the easier forms of creativity because it's kind of painting by numbers.
I think if you're I mean, some people just find it difficult to get any kind of paint on a model, but I think it's certainly in my experience and within our group, it's not a high bar for entry, you know.
No, like I am severely dyslexic and severely dyspraxic. It's like my hand-eye coordination is terrible. I also have like tremor and also, so like I cannot paint well. And I think I am a pretty decent miniature painter.
Yeah,
like absolutely. Tabletops, like my things, I'm pleased with some of my armies. And like when we did that big 6 mil game the other day, and like Andy's friend came around and took some professional photographs of them, I thought like my minis looked gorgeous.
Yeah, they did, yeah.
And so I think like, if I can do them, paint them, pretty much anybody can.
Absolutely.
I think that should be it. And also, like today we're talking specifically more about like the hobbying that you do on your own. But I think like the other, I think, you know, true boon of our hobby in the slightly wider world for the well-being sense is that when you're doing these things, quite often you're doing them to then play with somebody else, and you have some like social interaction, social contracting. And it might be that even if you're just talking to somebody else about the game, that, you know, you're actually having a conversation with somebody that you're talking to about the game, and it can be a way of making friends. You know, if, especially if like you're an adult and you move to a new area, it's very hard to make friends if, you know, you're a growing adult and all of a sudden you turn up into a new town or a new city and you know no one.
Mm-hmm. It's
like, hello, will you be my friend?
No, absolutely.
It's really difficult. And yet, like, I know for, like, I moved to London to go to university. After university, all of my friends were sensible and left London and went either, like, all over the country. So I was, like, I was living with my now wife, but knew no one. Joined our gaming club, and my entire circle of friends now is through people I've met gaming.
Yeah.
Or, like, through gaming adjacent activities. Is how I built my entire friendship. And I don't think I'm specifically unique in that regard. You know, being self-employed, you know, it would be quite untoward if I just started hanging out with my work colleagues, which is myself.
Yeah. No, I mean, I do socialise with my work folks, work friends. But yeah, apart from a couple of uni friends, it's all the gaming club, you know, people that I know through gaming. You know, I think we're, you know, as I always say, I've met some of the best people I've ever met. A couple of the worst, but mostly good eggs through wargaming and through role playing games. So, you know, I think it's got many different strengths to it. I think there's in terms of projects you do on your own. One thing I was thinking about this morning is I tried to read a book on Zen years ago, like Zen Buddhism. Couldn't get my head around it. And basically, it starts off by saying, yeah, if you're a Westerner, you're never going to get your head around Zen, so just don't worry about it. I do think that there is something that it's not just the experience of doing it, but it's also what you learn about yourself while you're doing something, I think, is without being too profound or pretentious rather, I feel like I've learned some things about myself and my you know, the way that I plan things, and you know, if there's a weirdness that I have, I can use the projects that I have to try and sort of discipline myself, like finishing a project, putting something together in a planned way that's, you know, disciplined. I think these are useful things to do, you know.
Three-peat of it, completely agree. I think those kind of like realizations are invaluable. And I think whatever, you don't have to have some like profound epiphany and go, oh, that's what it's all about. But sort of going like, I know for me, and it was only a couple of years ago where I did get past the point of thinking, well, you know, there is a point, some point in my future where it's like, I'll have painted everything I want to paint. Mm-hmm. And then it'll be like, it's done. I'm now into like, I'll sort of, it'll be like the end of the, you know, Raiders of the Lost Ark. I'll have all my armies done. I finished every period I wanted to do. I'd no longer have to like worry about getting things painted and like, how do I get these done as quickly as possible? And when I sort of realize that isn't a point I want to be in,
mm-hmm.
I all of a sudden slowed right down with my painting and no longer painted armies in Fortnite. And then it doesn't matter if this army takes me 3-4 months even to paint. I'm going to enjoy it. I'm not necessarily going to stress out and try and do like a super detailed paint job, because that's not what I find enjoyable, but I don't feel like I need to rush through and go, oh, I've got to paint 12 armies a year, or I've got to do 6 armies a year, or I need to do like 1,000 figures a year. It doesn't matter, because if I set myself an arbitrary goal, I'm going to do 500 figures in a year, yeah, and if I live for another 30 years, then, you know, that's a lot of figures that I've not got room for. And it's not like I'm not painting anything because I've got no room for it. I've tried to not put pressure on myself
for
doing things, or the pressure that is on for things that I do want to do. It's like this ECW thing for Joy of Six next year is pressure, but it's like, you know, it's a year. It was like, it gave me a year. I've done most of the training for it already. It's like a year to do a 6 mil project, so it's not exactly like a gun to my head.
No, and you could do other things around the edges as well.
Yeah, and well, I have, because, you know, Cherrington Wood, through certain glasses, looks remarkably like the Hurcombe Forest. at least on the grand scale that I've built it on, the same as the roads, and also like the roads through the Cherrington area could also be, you know, highways in like 10 mil stuff or like paths in 28. It's remarkable, you know, the zoom function on a bit of Google Earth and then some creative licenses and theatre of the mind, what you can sort of do with terrain, which is, again, it's just all sort of like fits into sort of like my mojo. Because I know sort of like this evening's episode's been sort of like super rambly, but I think it is, hopefully listeners can sort of take away the idea of like, do what works for you.
Yeah.
And,
yeah,
you know, like you can be like super structured and like have a database of what exactly what you've got in, you know, if you've done the checks on a shoulder pad in one space, or you might want to take that off or give it a different color, or, you know, the me on the other end of the spectrum, you know, how many armies have you got? Is shin high of don't know, it's mid-waist of you know.
Mid-waist in miniatures is a good alternative name for the podcast.
It would be, yeah. I think body heights is having a cupboard which is now I stack the really useful boxes into my body height. It's also a good point of realizing how decrepit you are when you're sort of like getting miniatures down. It's like, ah, the shoulder.
Don't put them too close to the ground, otherwise you'd do your back in.
Yeah, that is the honest truth. They're like the ones that you really don't play with very much at the bottom. You're like, oh, my Blood Angels and all my Space Wolves are very much, they're the ground thrillers on the bottom. And you're going, you lads really are on borrowed time till you go. So every time you sort of like get something in the cupboard, you're sort of looking at them and you go, yeah, I really don't see wherever I'm going to play with like a Sangari Guard army that's all based on like really badly done snow bases. And you go, you know, 2012 me was not the hobbyist or didn't have the standards that I have. Now, even my standards of today, I think, were somewhat better than they were a decade ago of weird Blood Angel armies.
Well, that's progress.
Oh, it is progress. I think it's, I know, like, to end with, I think it was when I started selling my stuff, that was like a big break in the past, because yeah, I'd never sold stuff before until quite recently, especially like armies I'd painted. I'd lost them, or like they'd sort of like all the stuff I'd painted as a kid somehow disappeared between being like 15, 16 and like stopped playing. And then going to uni, and then like going back to uni again in my like mid-20s. So I was like in my mid-20s when I sort of like picked the hobby back up properly. And, like, I have no idea where like all the stuff that I'd had as a sprog had gone. It just sort of vanished. Probably, you know, parents had chucked it in a charity shop with a bin and go, what do we need these random toys for? You know, they're probably akin to, you know, He-Man or Action Man or something.
Yeah.
I really wanted that dreadnought. But yeah, but since I'd like taken the hobby back up, you know, like 16 years ago, I just not got rid of anything. I'd not sold a single painted army. I still actually haven't sold a painted army. I've just sold the things around painted armies or unpainted things. And like we talked about before we started the podcast, like one of the big things I did sell, and mostly to you, Ed, was the like what I call like dangerous seeds. Of like when you've got like 3/4 of a project and you go, oh, these are really good, or like things that you find that you had, like I had like about 80% of like an original metal Deathwing, like Dark Angels army, and it only needs like a few more bits and pieces to finish it off. And I was like, oh, that would be really cool to finish off, but would I ever play with it? And it was like, never in a million years. So what do I need it for? I had a load of Rogue Trader vehicles, but not enough to make an army with. I needed some more Beaky Marines. I had quite a few nice Metal Space Orcs, but not enough to do like a second edition army with. So it was easier for me to get rid of those and like, you know, defuse that bomb of, well, I'm just going to pump money in to finish these off, than actually keep them just because I'll get to them at some point. So I know that's like fits in a little bit with the idea of like the sunk cost fallacy sort of thing. I've already spent money on these, so I'll spend more to finish them off. I was trying to like be mindful actually going, I've got these, I can't see me ever really wanting to use either one. I would like to use them, but do I really want to? And do I want to put like good money after them to get me to the point where they are usable? No, I will just sell them on. And luckily for in those cases, there were things that actually had some like resale value. Whereas things like the Sangarigard I was talking about earlier on, you know, if they go on eBay, I might be lucky if I get like £2 for them.
Well,
so they're probably just going to either go into the charity shop or find somewhere. Like, I don't even know if you can. Are like old plastic miniatures even recyclable?
Technically, you'd need to take them to Games Workshop, I think. they are doing a recycling service for old sprues, and apparently I doubt anyone from Games Workshop HQ is listening to the Hobby Support Group, but if they are, they just don't listen to the next couple of minutes. But yeah, basically a guy at the shop said, yeah, it doesn't have to be GW sprues, whatever sprues, we're happy to recycle them. If you turned up with an army, they might look at you a bit forlornly if you said, yeah, recycle them, but you probably could.
Might be an idea then, because I'm sure I'm not the only person who's got like a bucket of like snap fit plastic marines and stuff. Well, in fact, I took those down the club years ago. Like, who's got some kids who wants to just slap some emulsion on some marines or something? Because who needs
it's them? Weird, because there was that weird thing for the 90s second edition box set marine that suddenly there was a painting challenge and their value in quote marks went up. So but I think there's that middle ground of like mid 90s through to mid noughts 2010s plastic marines that probably, I don't know, but I suspect wouldn't be an awfully desirable thing.
No, especially as you can't, unless you're doing like period armies now, you can't use them for anything.
No, that's true. You would be looking at like people who are nostalgic for that period.
Who is nostalgic for like 2004?
I suppose what's going on in 2004? I used to go clubbing in 2004. I think it was the last time I went clubbing in 2004. So I'm nostalgic for that. I'm not nostalgic for Games Workshop from that period.
No. Well, maybe on that shocking revelation, we should call it quits for this evening, Ed. Thank you very much for joining me. Thank you, listeners. I hope you've enjoyed this. Hopefully the answers some questions you have about mojos and lists. Apologies for not more lists. We will be back soon and see what we have next week. All the best. See you soon. Good night, Ed.
Good night, Tom.